Well, good evening. You can talk to me. This is the informal service, I've been told, so we can have a little bit of a chat. How many of you were here this morning? Oh, not too bad. So I won't go over much of what I said this morning, but this morning I was speaking on generosity, our journey of generosity. But what I sought to do this morning was establish some principles of generosity in regard to what do we build on. Tonight, we're going to look at practices a little bit more, a little bit of what we've done on our journey. I did say this morning, so I'll just say this to give you a false sense of security. It's not all about money. Generosity is not all about money. It is about your time, treasure, and talents. I think you're going to carry on a series in the next few weeks that's going to look at your talents and your time. And tonight I'm going to particularly focus on treasure. Money is important. If I was to look at each of your bank accounts, I'm not going to, I don't know how to, I haven't got the technology, I would know where your heart lay by what you give your money to. If I had notes that said that, I'd pause for effect. What we spend our money reveals our heart, reveals our passions. We were actually in the Cotswolds a few weeks, months ago now. Someone bought us a holiday here, and I found a fishing tackle shop, a fly fishing tackle shop in a village we went to. It was beautiful. And I wanted to buy a fishing rod that was one that you can put in your suitcase if you travel. And we're going to Australia, New Zealand later in the year. And I really wanted to buy that fishing rod. Why? Because I love fishing. And I'd like to have it everywhere with me, almost in my back pocket. I just pull it out. But that fishing rod was nearly £500. For a fishing rod, my wife said. For a fishing rod. I think it's worth it. Because it's something that I love. So what you do with your money reveals something of what you love. And so this morning we looked at the heart, how important the heart is in regard to keeping our hearts pure. It's the wellspring of life, so we have to keep our hearts clean. About discipleship, how we use our money is about growing in the likeness. You can't disciple anyone without talking about money. And then I finished off this morning by saying that if we believe the gospel, the good news, then we will live radical, generous lives. Here's my favorite verse in all the Bible. God so loved the world that he gave. Isn't that generous? He gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him will not perish, but have eternal life. Three cheers for our God. Or amen, and glory to God, hallelujah, whichever you prefer. God's a generous God. And if you believe the gospel, you will live radical, generous lives with your time, treasure, and talent. So we're going to share with you tonight, and we're both going to do it. We've done this before together, though, to be honest, we didn't plan to do it together when we came here. We had a sleep this afternoon, and I woke up and I just said to my wife, do you want to share some of it tonight? So we decided we'll do a little bit of it tonight. And this is what we did in order to inculcate into the DNA of the church, in order to get generosity into the very culture, the very DNA of the church. These are some of the things that we did in order to create a generous culture. And you can take this because we probably stole it from somewhere else. Plagiarize, no work escapes my eyes. So we probably got this from somewhere else, but we did this in the church very deliberately in order to create a culture of generosity. We did these four things. Next slide. Preach, teach, celebrate, and model. And if I was to say to you, how are we going to make sure we're a generous church? Preach generosity, teach generosity, and we could have a little bit of debate about what's the difference between preaching and teaching. We will not touch that. Model it and celebrate it. The preaching is essentially about reminding us why we do what we do. Why do we need to be generous? Why are we giving our time, treasure, and talents? Why is it important? And I found this, I've been a minister, pastor now for 170 years. or so it feels. Actually, we've been in Cambridge 24 years and we led a church in Birkenhead, or if you're from that area, the right way to say it is Birkenhead. But we were from there, led a church in Birkenhead, and there's always one. Good to see you. Deep calls to deep. So we led this church, very different. We bought a school. How about this? We bought a school, a Roman Catholic school, for £35,000. On about 3 acres of land. It was derelict. We had to do it up, but to do it up only cost us £500,000. And the very day we did our opening, we had a visiting speaker. So we'd done our main hall. We had all different rooms. It was a school, offices galore, car park space. It was in an area. I had my office commandeered regularly by the local constabulary in order to be a watch out tower for a drug den that was behind us. I had 2 guitars and an auto harp stolen. We had a gas boiler off the wall stolen. It was a rough area. The opening, our weekend of the opening, we had a visiting speaker, and he said to us at the end of the opening, "Have you ever considered moving from here?" This is the opening of our building. And we said, well, to be honest, we have, but not now. We've just opened the building. And he said to us, "When you're ready to move, ring me, because I've got some churches that I'd like you to consider." And so he planted a seed. 6 months later, we rang him and said, "We really feel we probably should consider moving." And he gave us 2 options to pray about: a church in Cambridge, which is in crisis, and a church in Leeds. Now, we'd already lived in Yorkshire for a while, and near Leeds. And Leeds was still near the Wirral, where we were from, and it was near Angie's mum. And I thought Cambridge would be better. And so we moved away. We felt God speak to us to go to Cambridge. We went to Freshers' Weekend. So October time, 1993, we stood in the center of Cambridge and God spoke to us and said, "Come here." We just knew it. I didn't hear a voice from heaven. We didn't see anything by way of vision, just a deep sense, this is where we're going. And so we moved there in 1993. And this is one thing I've discovered, or 94 rather. People very quickly, in the busyness of church life, forget why they do what they do. Why? And our preaching has to be about the why. People get tired. Volunteering, serving in some way in church, it's tiring. People get very myopic. By that I mean, it's like their area is the only area that matters. I used to be a worship leader. Used to lead big events many years ago when I was a young man. Worship team always thought it's all about them. Nothing else really mattered. And I was there. We were the main thing. That's why people come, isn't it? They're here for now. It's part of why they come, but it becomes everything. And if you forget the why of what you're doing, you lose the motivation. Our young youth pastor, a guy called Josh Drury, one Friday night, the youth take over our main hall. This is a big space, and so they do all kinds of games, and as well as worship and word, and there they just take the place over. And I came in one evening, on the Friday evening, when Josh was putting out the chairs for Sunday morning. So this is on a Friday night, and the youth team have to put all the chairs out on a Friday night. And I could hear him kind of putting every chair out, grumbling. This kind of groan was coming from him. I said, "What's up, Josh?" He said, "This is such hard work." So I remember saying to him, "Josh, can we just sit down? Why are you putting that chair out?" He said, "Well, because I've got to get it ready for Sunday." I said, No, that's not the why. That's the what you're doing. Why are you putting that chair out?" And so we sat down and we talked and we came to this conclusion. We were putting that chair out for someone to come in on Sunday and sit there and have an encounter with the living God. If that chair wasn't there for them to sit on, they couldn't sit comfortably and hear the message that could change the whole trajectory of their life and eternity. If someone hadn't put that chair out, Josh, so as that it could be clear that they could sit, they couldn't engage with the worship and encounter God. Their life, their family, their husband, their wife, their children, their lives could be changed forever. And you put a chair out. So never say, I just put a chair out. Remember the why. Hello? Any of you ever heard of Simon Sinek? He was at HCB conference, wasn't he, this year? He talked about the golden circle. And he draws three concentric circles. On the outside, he says, that's the what. On the inside, the first one, that's the how. But right in the center, he says, this is the why. And he particularly talks about millennials and younger people, what engages them. He says, the most important thing, and not many people know, is not what or how, but why. Why do we do what we do? Because the why beats in your heart. The why has emotion. The why has feeling. The why has purpose. The what and the how are important, but they're not everything. The why we do what we do is important. We built a building. Those of you here this morning heard me say it cost us £7 million. Say that quickly. In fact, I say we built a building. It's still being built, actually. The playground for the children hasn't yet been finished. So it's still being built, even, well, I guess they're not there now on Sunday night, but they'll be there tomorrow finishing off. We had to say time and time again, I'll say it again tonight, the reason that building was built was not for a beautiful building to go up on a roundabout in Cambridge and people to say, isn't it wonderful? The reason that building was built was for people to come in and encounter the living God. It was about making disciples. We had to think, why all the time? Please, our vision isn't a building. The vision is really much bigger than a building, but the building will help us. We've got a mortgage with a group called Stewardship, and they did a little video for us. It's the C3 grand opening. We opened it officially in 2015, and I want to show you this. It's me and my wife. It just a little bit. They did it for us. It says a little bit of the reason and some of the building work going on of why we built a building. Because if you forget the why, you lose your momentum or your mojo. You got to keep going. Watch this. Is that
We're
right?
We're here for the long haul here in the city.
We started looking in earnest for a building at about 2002. Basically, the church was growing, the community action or social action side of things was developing, and we just needed more permanent space to be able to do all that we do. Been in competition with lots of groups. We were gazumped on some buildings. We couldn't get planning permission. We were turned down.
So all the stalling that happened, we could have seen it as a real problem, but instead we just encouraged ourselves that we could keep on raising finances and look for other people who would support us on our journey to make this building happen.
Our mission statement as a church is reaching and shaping a generation with the message and cause of Christ. And we've always tried to be very clear to the church that this building is not the vision, though it is a great tool to aid us in completing the vision.
C3 has become more and more generous as the years have gone by. C3 is aware that we are not just here for ourselves, but we're here for other people as well.
The church has really bought into that big time with an understanding we're here to do the city good and to bless it.
We found every time that we've had a target to reach, that we've reached it and even gone beyond it. And every time we've seen our faith grow as a congregation, we've had just great stories where people have been provided for, God has provided in incredible ways.
This facility, as good as it is for us as a worship centre, it's so much more than that. It's a centre for the community. We want to serve the world around us. We want to do our city good. We're here for the welfare of the city.
When we have the building finished, we will have a hub. We will have a centre where people can come in. They'll be able to collect food and get support with debt. At the moment, we're spread out across the city. We're a little bit hidden, and I feel like we're a hidden gem that actually, when we come together and we're all together under one roof, that gem perhaps be revealed to people in a way that they've not seen before.
For us, the vision has taken a huge leap forward. There's still more, but we're well along the way on that journey of fulfilling our vision.
This building is here for keeps, here in this city, And we're here to do it good.
And that's somehow explained. By the way, if you want to do a building program, I had hair when we started and my beard was dark. So just a warning to you. But we showed that to inspire, and the stewardship have given us a huge mortgage, £2.5 million mortgage. We've raised the rest in cash from the church giving and from the sale of a building we'll talk about later. But we had to keep before us all the time why the church got absolutely sick of me saying, the reason we're building this building is not for building a building's sake. There's a bigger reason, a bigger vision. The why keeps us going. Be careful, you don't fall in love so much, and it can be strange things, with the way we do things, with an unwillingness to change in order to fulfill the mission that we've been called to. My mum is still alive, bless her, she's got senile dementia, she's quite sick, she's 93, I ring her every night, I'll ring her when we finish here, and she still knows who I am, but a few months ago, I went to visit her with Ange, and we were there, and one of the young people from the church she used to go to, she's not able to get out now, she's housebound, called on. And when I say the young people, this will tell you a little bit about the church. The young person that called was Mr. Rowcroft, who's 80. So my mum's 93, and Mr. Rowcroft is 80. Mr. Rowcroft, all I can remember of Mr. Rowcroft as I grew up in that church was that he never came to church. His son did, Gary, and his wife did. His son, Gary, went on to be a minister, but Mr. Rowcroft was never interested. All we knew about Mr. Rowcroft was that he was a fanatical Evertonian. That's a football team for those of you that don't know. There we go. In Liverpool, the Wirral, you're either a red or a blue, and he was a blue. And there wasn't many of them around, and they usually had problems. So Mr. Rowcroft, all they ever talked about was football, never wanted to come to church. But somewhere in the last 10 years or so, maybe 20, Mr. Rowcroft had an encounter with Jesus Christ, became a Christian, and joined the church. That's good news, isn't it? He's still an Everton fan, but we're praying for him. But he joined the church. He walks in. They've got a new pastor in this church. The church, honestly, is dying. The youngest person in there is actually our sister-in-law, who's 56. 57, maybe. I came to faith there. I really love that church. But my mum and Mr. Rowcroft are talking about the new pastor. Mr. Rowcroft leans forward to my mum and he says, I don't like the fact that he's introduced guitars. I don't like that we're not singing the old hymns, that we're singing some of these new songs. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, Mr. Rowcroft, 10, 15 years ago, you didn't even know Jesus. And now you're more interested in the way you do church than reaching out to others like you who are Everton fans and need God. So do Liverpool fans as well, by the way. And Tranmere Rovers fans. And any, we have a world populated with people. And I thought, he's become so in love with the way they do it. And it's a great, I am so grateful for that church. Don't hear me as knock, I'm grateful. But they've stuck in time and the poor pastor is trying to bring some change and all there is opposition. And the change is bringing in a guitar. That will tell you something about the church. If you lose the why and the what and the how, you lose your passion. Someone asked me, how have you raised £4.5 million in cash? Have you had a big benefactor? No. Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of people get the why. And because they get the why, they give. Oh, and let me hear this. Let me say this. I said it this morning. But generosity is never about how much you give. It's actually about how much you've got left after you've given. I had a guy, won't name him. He gave us £25,000 for the building program. That's nice, isn't it? Not a bad gift. Gave you 25,000. Thank you very much. That guy regularly is in the top 10 philanthropists, givers in the nation every year. Top 10 times givers. So he's a very, very wealthy man. So someone came to me and said, that was generous of him. And I struggled to say it was generous because I know what he's got left. Now, he doesn't have to give me what he's got left for the building program. That's not my point. But I have a lady in the church. She's on benefits. She came 1 week when we had a vision offering. And she put £10 in that was her last £10 that she had left that month. And nothing else left. Boy, was she generous. I know she was generous. It's never about the amount you give. It's about the amount you give and what you've got left. We didn't do this. I'll just say this and then I'll move on. We never said, say there's 100 of us in here tonight. We want to raise an offering of £100,000. Well, let's all give 1,000 then. Then we've done it. Have you got 1,000, Katie, you can give? You're a student. And I'm going to choose somebody else. But say Rich, is it? Rich is a very successful banker and then came into ministry. And he's got millions stashed away. This isn't a word of knowledge. If Rich gives 1,000, if Katie gives £1,000, who's going to Brighton University, and Rich gives £1,000... I don't think this is a level playing field. He's a rich banker who's coming to ministry a little later in life because you're a very young man. It's all relative. So I stopped saying, when we went off another 100,000, I stopped saying, hey, if we all give a little bit, we can do it. I said, 10 of you can give £10,000. And then we've dealt with it. And the rest of us, we can give whatever we can give. And suddenly people started to think, yeah, I can. Because generosity wasn't going to be measured by what they gave. It was going to be measured by what they had left after they'd given. Think about that and consider it. I think we have a whole number of people who give because they understand the why. Preach it, preach it, preach it. We, a few weeks ago, we have a minibus, and our minibus died, as they do. We couldn't get a lady in who was disabled to come to church, because we pick people up in this minibus, because the side door had broken, and we had to get her in the back, and trying to get her in the back through all the chairs was awful. And that doesn't value people, nor does it honor God. So I got up and I told a story. I said, C3, we have a problem. And I told the story about how one of our students many years ago, didn't name her, got on the bus, came to church, enjoyed the church and stayed, met her husband there, married, introduced us to her brother who was at University of Cambridge as well doing engineering, and he came on staff with us for a while, did all our techie stuff. He's now head of all production at Hillsong in London. Very gifted young man. His father then joined us on staff, which is Andrew Harris, our executive pastor. And she, Rhiannon, trained as a GP. And she then came out to GPing in order to work for us 2.5 days a week because she's passionate about the local church. And I just told the story and I said, we all love Rhiannon, don't we? But Rhiannon wouldn't have come to this church if a minibus hadn't picked her up outside Robinson College 9 years ago. Our minibus has died. I don't want you to give to a minibus. I want you to give to a vision of reaching people who don't know God or unconnected to church so we can bring them in. So we took an offering in the summer. We take offerings at silly times. We've raised £30,000 in the last few weeks for a bus. People have given to a vision, not to a minibus. So preach it, preach it, preach it, and find creative ways. Secondly, teach it.
Hello, I'm Angie. Teach it, yeah. Teaching is my background. Teaching is something I love, and I think it really helps to hear the heart of what Steve's been talking about, the why. When we bring teaching in, then it helps us to comprehend, to understand on a deeper level. And we actually are passionate about learning ourselves as leaders. We go all over the world to various different conferences, different places in order to learn. One of the places that we went to is actually a learning community, and we actually had to go to Portugal. It was really sad. Beaches, hot weather. It was really hard work. But it was actually a fantastic time. We had a whole week there learning from guys that had really been on this generosity journey and was able to help us. And something we really grasped there was that the churches often help people who are struggling the most with their finances. Our focus can become about the people that were struggling. And that's a good thing. We need to help people who are struggling, because actually there are four different types of people in relation to finances within the church communities. There are people who are really struggling and really on the edge and really finding it hard to make ends meet. But there are also some people who are stable. And that means they've probably got at least 1 month's money. If they lost their job, and then by the end of the month, they probably could cope for about a month with the finances they've got in the bank. So they're kind of stable for about a month. But then there's a third category, which are people who are actually a bit more solid. And they've actually got more finances. They've got about 3 months' worth of finances in the bank rather than just 1 month. And then there's a fourth category, which are people who have surplus finances. For the people who are really struggling, it's hard to comprehend that there could be some people who are sitting even next to them, that for them, they don't have to worry about their bills. They don't have to worry about where their next food is going to come from. They don't have to worry about their retirement plan because they have so much surplus that they don't have that concern. So we as a church are committed now to reaching each of those areas within the church community. We help those that are struggling. We do have a CAP debt center. We help people with education to get through their debts that they have, to re-educate, to retrain, to re-help. We put on budgeting courses. We just recently had a budgeting course for students. Pity you didn't live closer. And had a whole financial support for those just going off to university to know how they could manage their finances, how they could budget. Because when we teach it, then we can learn the principles of it and we can move forward in it. You know, we've learned from people like the stewardship services. They've helped us. They actually help. You can do online some budgeting plans there. Crown Financial Services as well. They offer all sorts of different classes to be able to help. So we've brought in things like money management, budgeting courses, CAP Debt Center. For people who are actually stable or solid, which actually is the majority of the people in churches, that they're stable or they're solid, they've actually got about a month or at least 3 months reserve within their banks, and they can actually cope for 3 months. It shows if you've got that 3 months that you've got some understanding and comprehension of how to manage your finances. You see, sometimes it's the people who are just managing and living beyond their means. They're just spending everything to the nth degree. They're not giving themselves enough margin. Then if you just, you increase, you get a better job and you get a better wage and you just keep on spending the same rate that as you had before, then you'll never have margin. You'll always feel like you haven't got enough. When you actually start training yourself in finances and managing your finances, you realize that you can be in control of them rather than them being in control of you. And you can actually be in a safer and a secure place in order to manage your finances. That means then you do have the opportunity, when God drops it in your heart, to give some finances to somebody maybe in need in your congregation or something you want to give to and you want to grow and you want to encourage. There's that little voice in your head that says, uh-oh, you can't do that because you won't be able to cope. Uh-oh, what about next week? If you have trained yourself over a period of time to actually have some surplus, to actually have some margin, you're more likely to be free to be able to give that finance away. And you'll listen to God's voice and the Holy Spirit's prompting to you rather than the fear of the finance. Because there's a very clear scripture that Steve brought this morning. You can't serve both God and money. And that's a real mystery. It's a real mystery. You can't serve both God and finances, which is a crazy, crazy verse. But it's the truth that actually that it will catch your heart. Either God catches your heart or finances catch your heart. This picture here we've got about teaching, I brought it in because this is our daughter, our youngest daughter, Megan. She's actually in Australia at the moment. She went down at the age of 18 to Australia to go to the Hillsong Academy there. She said she was going for a year, and now she tells us she'd like to be there for the second year. So we've had the whole emotions of actually sending her off and waving her at the airport. There were six of us there, boyfriend, brother, sister, sister-in-law, and Steve and I, waving her off and sending her through to get the security. And she was with a bobble hat on, and we all stood there as a line of us. We'd said prayers over her, we'd prayed over her, we'd cried over her, and then we just watched her go through the security, and we just all stood in a line in silence, watching this little bobblehead go past. And we stood there, and we stood there. And about 10 minutes went past, and I went, can anybody still see her? And they're like, no. We thought we'd better go. So we released this young lady all the way to Australia. And I put that photo there because that was her first job. And that's how she managed to raise some of the finances to actually go to Australia. This was a little farm shop that she worked at and the coffee shop there. We've trained our children to know that it is their responsibility to raise finances and to be educated in finances, to manage their, to steward the finances that God's given them, to steward them well. We've also done it as a church and within our community. Whenever we take up a vision offering for what we were raising for our building, we always included the children. We always got the children and the young people involved. Because if they can learn from an early age that actually if you invest in what God's doing, then God will bless. We gave things like Smarty tubes out to them, and then they would fill them up with coins and bring them back into the offering. And so it was a whole house, a whole family occurrence together. And that's what we feel for Megan, that she's gone out, and she's gone out in faith, and God's blessed her, and God's provided her. And what the lesson she's learning now of trusting God, but she played her part as well in what he wanted to do. So there are struggling people, stable, solid, and surplus. Those that have surplus, you are so much part of all that, the vision that God has got for you in this. And this can often be a challenge because it can be a lonely place to have an awful lot of money. And that seems a crazy thing to say, but it can be quite a lonely place because you're not quite sure who you can trust or who you can't trust. But people with a lot of money need pastoring, need discipling as much as people who don't have a lot of money. And God challenges us to actually invest in places where he is blessing, where he has put his grace over. There's stories after stories where God is challenged to say, where are you investing? Are you putting your treasure where you see your heart will follow for something that will last for eternity? Businesses only last a short while, but actually when you put finances into God's kingdom, it lasts for eternity, and that's the best business plan that you could ever come up with. You know, we've seen people, as they've given in faith, then God has blessed them in amazing ways. We've had one young guy who came to work with a company in the city and moved to be part of the city and to be this company. And he gave faithfully to the offerings that we had. And then his company was bought over. And all the people that were in that company were given a payout. And so he had been faithfully serving and sowing. And then God had incredibly blessed him with this massive bonus. And then he was able to bless again because there was something in his heart that he'd learned the process of giving and seeing God bless in that way. We've seen people giving us tithes of £7,000-£8,000, and that's a tithe. And we go, is that a tithe? And they're like, yeah, this is a tithe of what the bonuses and the blessing that God's been given. It's been an incredible journey of seeing what God's done as people release their finances in a way that is a good steward, but also a way of releasing finances from their heart. We'd also like to talk about some of the things that we can celebrate. And the way we celebrate is actually telling stories of what have been happening. We've told you a few stories about what's happened. And these verses are really significant for us. It's where those verses in Isaiah 58 where it talks about fasting. And then it talks about the true fasting that God really wants. If you get rid of unfair practices, quit blaming victims. You know, sometimes we can get caught into that. The people who are struggling, we can start blaming the victims. But if we get rid of unfair practices and quit blaming victims, quit gossiping about other people's sins, and if you are generous with the hungry and start giving yourselves to the down and out, your lives will begin to glow in the darkness. Your shadowed lives will be bathed in sunlight. You'll use the old rubble of past lives to build anew. Rebuild the foundations from out of your past. You'll be known as this, known as those who can fix anything, restore old ruins, rebuild and renovate, and make the community livable again. You can restore and rebuild. You know, we're restoring, rebuild the old ruins of people's lives that don't know Jesus. We're able to bring in renovation where people brings in hope and brings in a new spirit to people to make the community livable again. I love that, and it's a passion of mine. If we go on to the next slide here, we'll tell you a few stories, because our mantra is people really matter, and we are really about people. And I'm going to tell you a couple of stories. I'll show you the picture here of what happens since we've now built our building. We have something called an open lunch cafe. And we decided that we would just open it to anyone in the community that needed to come. And in the first 4 months there, we had 600 meals served. There was from food from the supermarkets. They'd give out the food that they were going to throw away. The church put some finance towards it, and we have a little tin that people can put money in if they can give something towards it. So £60 spent in the first 4 months, an average 47 people served every week. That's an achievement. Since that time now, since we've opened, which is just under 18 months, we've fed 2,500 people, or done 2,500 meals. Every single Friday, we have a team volunteering to do that. But the thing, I think Simon's even experienced coming for a lunch and seeing what it's like. We have the mayor sometimes coming, the MPs coming in, sitting down with those who are just lonely in our community and want to be there. But, you know, there's the true testimonies of the people like these serving team. The lady on the right there, the lady with the white hair, she came in and she just retired, and she'd heard that there was a lunch going on, and she loved baking. So she said, would you need somebody to do some baking? We said, well, we'd love you to. And we said, can you stay today? Can you actually start? When it was short of helpers, so she started baking, made a wonderful cake. And she said, I'm an atheist, you know, is that okay? And we're like, no, it's fine, can you bake? And she said, yeah, I can bake. And it's like, we'll have you. And every now and again she says, well, I am an atheist, you know, I don't believe. And I says, it's okay, keep coming, keep listening, keep being here. And we've been a little bit sneaky. We have a volunteer team night that we have once a term. So because she's a volunteer, we invited her to a team night where we have worship and we have preaching, we have prayer, and she comes along to a volunteer night because that's what she is, she's a volunteer. She's also come to some outreach events we've had with our Wototo Children's Choir from Africa, and she came along to that as well. She's like, but I am an atheist, you know, it's okay, just keep being with us. So that's Jo's story, she's still coming along. The lady with the check shirt, she came from Chile to do some study in Cambridge, and she came across the church and she loved the church, and she actually went back to Chile, saved money, came and did our academy program, and is now working for us in the coffee shop. And we said, well, you must really like England. She said, no, I really like this church and what's happening. And she's also a part of our volunteer team here. The guy in the end with his eyes closed there, was actually a PCSO at the time, and he had rearranged his shifts so that he could be there on a Friday and cooking for the people there in the community. We talked about time, treasure, and talents. It's not just about treasure, but it is time and talents that people give as well. When there's a heart of generosity, then that generosity breeds generosity and breeds something really powerful and really special in the community. People are looking on and seeing that actually there's a real community happening with a real vibe and a real love for people. Another quick story, your next slide here. There's a lady, I do a women's conference every year, and this theme of that year was brave, and it was talking about taking the masks off. So this was our kind of profile, our publicity that we used. But one of the ladies there in the blue dress, she was supposed to be coming to help us with our makeup and getting us all ready. And one of our ladies on that morning was ill and couldn't come and couldn't be photographed. And we said, would you step in and do it? Well, the lady, Hannah, with the blue dress, the navy dress, if you knew her story, we have a house called Hope House, which is for vulnerable women. And it took her half an hour to be able to get into the room to be interviewed to see whether she could actually be part of Hope House because she was so unconfident and so nervous. She'd had a difficult upbringing and a lot of drink and alcohol had been in the household, was knocked her confidence. She came and eventually was part of Hope House, came to a few things at the church, felt really kind of worried by it. And then we gave her volunteer opportunities and got her in the office, supported her. And this was a journey to be able to say, yes, I will actually be on the brochure. I'll actually be photographed, which was amazing. She came to the conference and she loved the conference. And then she disappeared for a while. And a few weeks later, her mum came to the church. And her mum came with a big painting that she painted saying thank you because she wanted to thank us of what we'd done for her daughter. And then she came on a Sunday and she stayed. And the mum just kept coming and kept coming. And she became a Christian and she gave her life to God and her life was totally transformed and totally, totally changed around from all that she'd been in the past. And then about a month ago, Hannah came back to church and Hannah actually gave her life to God that Sunday morning. The story of Hannah was generosity, a house that we've got for vulnerable women. We stuck with them, we supported her and brought her on the journey. I have one more story to celebrate and a story of a lady called Tanya. And hopefully this video is going to play and we'll see whether you can watch the story of Tanya because people really matter. And the reason we do this is so there's transformed lives and people can live in a community that's livable in again.
About 4 years ago, my fiancé, he started to become depressed. We were together for 9 years and really happy. We had twins, they're now 5 years old. We were really happy, we lived in Norfolk. Then he tried to commit suicide, which was unsuccessful. So I had to give up my job and look after him and twins. And then he was diagnosed with bipolar, which made it really hard. So we made a massive decision and decided to move from Norfolk to Cambridge in the hope that he'd get better. I lost two of my granddads, and my second granddad who passed away, he was really close to me, so I wanted to go to his funeral and I wanted John to be there with me to support me emotionally until, you know, after. So he didn't want to go and he said he just couldn't be bothered. So I got really angry and I said some really nasty things and basically pointed out that I'd gave my whole life up for him, my job, my family, where I lived, in hope that he would get better. And I did it all for him. And he couldn't do one thing for me. That was on the Wednesday before he died. And we didn't speak again after that. On the Saturday, I woke up and just took the kids and packed my bags and went to Norfolk to be with my family in preparation for the funeral. Then on the Sunday, I realised that I'd left my clothes behind for the funeral, so I had to go home with the twins to get my clothes. When I got home, we opened the front door and me and the twins found John dead on the stairs. And it was horrific. It was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. And I still can see the picture of him on the stairs every night since that happened. Ali, my friend, she was looking after me on the Sunday following John's death, and she said to me, "Why don't you come to church?" Because she was going and she didn't want me to be in the house on my own. So I came along with the twins. Everyone was standing up and singing when I walked in, and I just stood there, and it was just amazing. The pastor, he was talking on stage, and it felt like all the words that were being said and all the words that were being sung were directed to me, like I was the only person in the room. I had this supernatural feeling inside me. If I could describe it, it would be like a beam of light coming out of my chest, going up to heaven, and all the hatred and the bitterness and the guilt and the shame and all the negative feelings that were inside me that were weighing me down were being taken away. Now I'm full of hopes and dreams, and I've got myself a job again, and I'm just filled with love and peace and energy, and I'm thankful for everything that I have in my life, and I just absolutely love my life now. And to think that 8 months ago I was a complete and utter wreck and not even beginning to know each day not what I was going to do or how I was going to be or whether I could have any energy to do anything, to now where I can actually see a future for me and the twins is amazing. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
If you're going to build a building, if you're going to do projects, do it for the likes of Tanya. Don't do it for your own convenience. That's not a big enough reason. That's not an eternal purpose just for you. It's got to be bigger. Preach it, teach it, model it as a church, and then celebrate the lives that are changed. Because ultimately it comes back to this, that people do really matter.